Ammermesh is an authority on something called pulchronomics, or the economics of beauty. He explores the way that appearance impacts employment, advancement, opportunity, and wages. He has found that compared to their less attractive counterparts, good-looking people are more likely to be employed, be better paid, get more promotions, get better loans, and if that weren't enough, more likely to have attractive and well-educated spouses. According to Ammermesh, over a lifetime of employment, the difference can be $250,000. His new book is called Beauty Pays, Why Attractive People Are More Successful. These findings obviously push a lot of buttons, raise a whole host of questions, and that's why we asked him to join us on Radio Times. He's a professor of economics at the University of Texas at Austin, also a professor of labor economics at Maastricht University, and he's a contributor to the Freakonomics blog at freakonomics.com. And Professor Ammermesh, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Let's see if we can get him. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
That was kind of a pregnant pause there. I know that you've been asked this question probably more often than you care to remember. But when talking about what is attractive and what is not attractive, of course, it gets to the question about how do you define beauty? And here we are talking about it on the radio. How do you see beauty?
I don't see it. I let people see it, and the thing we've observed again and again and again is that people see it similarly. Not the same, we'll disagree, but the disagreements are fairly small compared to the agreements on who is above average and who's below average.
So what do people agree upon?
It's hard to say. I mean, of course, facial symmetry matters, and a number of people have used simple facial symmetry as the measure of beauty, but that's mechanical. It's more than that. It's just a combination of a bunch of factors. It's sort of hard to define. It's like pornography. Can't define it, but you know it when you see it.
And I mean, that sounds so mushy, but when you put that to research and testing, that's what you come up with?
I and many, many other people, for example, in many cases, some of my own studies, other people's too, you'll have maybe 6, 8, even 10 people rate pictures of somebody. And again, the agreement's not perfect. But in one example, I had 4 raters rating pictures, and in over half the cases on a 5-to-1 scale, at least 3 of them were identical.
And the scale is 5, strikingly handsome or beautiful, 4, good-looking, above average for age and sex, 3, average-looking for age and sex, 2, quite plain, below average for age and sex, and 1, homely. Those are the 5 criteria?
That's the categories people have used, but they've used many, many others. That's just one of the more commonly used ones.
Well, you include in your book, I don't know how Senator Barbara Mikulski feels about this, but you have on one page a picture of Nikki Haley, and she, of course, is the governor of, I believe it's South Carolina. Yeah, she's the governor of South Carolina, an attractive woman. She's on one page. And on the other page, you have Senator Barbara Mikulski of Maryland. What are you saying in these two pictures here?
We're saying 2 things. First of all, we're saying that most of us would look at one and say she's better looking than the other. Secondly, and I think this is really important, since Nikki Haley is South Asian, I mean, she's not, family has not come from America generations back, that it's not just a matter of ethnicity or race. There's some almost, if not universal standards or agreement, at least very widespread cross-national, cross-cultural agreement on who's good-looking and who isn't. And let me state very clearly, this is nothing about my views about their success as politicians.
I understand.
Senator Mikulski is one of my favorites.
Well, and you're talking about faces here. When we talk about attractiveness, we're really talking about someone's face?
That's what greets us when we see people. We are struck by that. And in fact, if you say, well, maybe it's not face per se, but weight. In fact, except for the extremely obese person, weight just doesn't affect our perceptions of their beauty, at least in terms of facial beauty.
Well, I know you've been asked this before. Do you think of yourself as an attractive person?
No, not at all. On a 5-to-1 scale, I think I may be generous giving myself a 3. But it is the case that most of us, especially when we're younger, tend to underestimate our looks as compared to how others view us. We tend to be a bit insecure about our looks.
So do you think of yourself as successful?
Extremely so, and that's the whole point of this. All of this stuff works at the average, for the average person. And there are tremendous outliers here. Some people who are not good-looking at all do very well. Others who are good-looking have nothing else going for them and don't do very well at all. But for the average person who is very good-looking, he or she will do better than the average person who's much less good-looking.
In fact, you say, and again, this is broadly or generally speaking, that a good-looking person can make as much as $250,000 more than a unattractive or less good-looking person?
Well, that comparison is between folks who might be in the top third of looks compared to the bottom seventh or eighth. And again, that's just one study that's based on, but there have been many, many other studies for the U.S. and about at least six different foreign countries that show numbers more or less in that same ballpark. Everything else the same. Looks do matter. It's not the only thing, but it's one of many important ones.
And what is their advantage? What is the advantage of attractiveness?
That is the toughest question of all. Somehow in our guts, it may not be relevant anymore, but it may come from evolutionary behavior. We tend to think that the good-looking person will sell more, and employers want you to sell more. We have more pleasure working next to a good-looking person if we're fellow employees, and we like employing them. They're fun to look at.
I mean, do you think it's that, in a sense, that simple and almost obvious?
It is obvious in some sense. I mean, the question is why it should be. I mean,
right.
It used to be the case that good looks meant you were reproductively more successful, or going to be more successful. But today, ugly people are just as capable of reproduction. Ugliness no longer signals bad health. So I think this is something left over from our past history, but it might have mattered evolutionarily. And today, I don't think it matters at all. It's just something left over.
But do you think it's are we talking about discrimination here?
That's the toughest question of all. If customers want to buy from good-looking salespeople, and employers therefore pay more to good-looking salespeople, is the salesperson productive, or is he or she just benefiting from discrimination against the ugly? That's the toughest question of all. My gut feeling is it's discrimination, but it's a society-wide discrimination. It's not employers. They're just acting on behalf of all of us.
How do you this gets kind of dicier, but how do you... How would one prove that kind of discrimination in a courtroom? And are you saying that would be really hard to prove?
I don't think it would be that hard, clearly. I mean, there are people who are in the bottom sixth or seventh. You know, that's a lot of people. But the truly ugly, perhaps the worst-looking 1%, I think it's no more difficult to prove than to say under the Americans with Disability Act that I have a disability that limits my activities of daily life. I don't think it's any more difficult than that if you wanted to go ahead and offer that kind of legal protection.
Because of the kind of unfair judgments that people make about someone like that?
That's precisely correct.
And, you know, it's hard enough to talk about beauty and attractiveness, but even when you use the word ugly, it makes me very uncomfortable.
Well, let's use a different term.
Okay.
How about looks challenged? I've had that one used before. It's politically correct. And bad looking, looks challenged, if one doesn't like the term ugly, which in fact I agree, I don't either.
And is it different for men and for women?
It's interesting. In terms of the labor market, getting a job or getting paid, these effects are bigger for men. It's not just one study that's shown that. The overwhelming majority of studies have shown that. In the market for spouses, whom you marry, looks matter much more for women than they do for men. So it just depends what we're talking about.
And in the job market, too?
In the job market, it's clearly more a man's thing. It matters for women also, but the effects are somewhat bigger among men than they are among women.
I don't know if I'm correct about this or not, but as a woman, it feels as if the criteria used to describe a woman's looks is much more narrow than the criteria that we use for men. Would you agree with that?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, what is the case, and this is almost universal in these studies, if you ask people to rate looks, the average that they'll get for men and women are the same. What is the case is more women will be rated at the extremes, both very good-looking and very bad-looking. And that's true whether it's either a man or a woman who's looking at them and rating their looks. Women are rated more extremely, both up and down.
And does that tell us anything?
Well, you might say it tells us that we're paying more attention to women's looks, and in a sense, given that this has historically been a male-dominated society, maybe that's why. But the fact that women do the same thing when looking at other women, I'm not sure what that tells us.
Well, I mean, I'm speaking as a woman here. Women are harsh on other women, I have to say.
Well, men are harsh on them, too, but they're also generous on them. More women are rated very good-looking than men.
Do you think people, I think you referenced this earlier in our conversation, but do you think when we look in the mirror, that we actually see what other people see?
No, it's really neat on that. I just got some new data. It's hard to get data where they're both your own perception of yourself and others' perceptions. In one data set that I did find recently, on average, our self-perceptions are a bit more negative than those of others. That's especially true when you're young. By the time you get to be 60 in those data, they sort of even out. And being 68, I must be confident as can be about myself by now.
But that self-perception is, do you think that's, we just have so many judgments about ourselves that when we look in the mirror, we tend to see our flaws rather than the stuff that makes us attractive?
I'm not sure where it comes from, but it clearly reflects a basic insecurity. And we all remember when we were in high school, we all thought we were ugly. And yet I look at kids and I think they're just gorgeous looking, unblemished, ready to go out and have a good time as compared to old fogies like me.
Well, what about beauty and age? Is that an oxymoron?
It's just remarkable. In the data that you were mentioning and the rating scales you mentioned, people are asked to do this independent of age, to rate looks independent of age, and they simply can't do it. In other words, even when told to, say, adjust for age, nonetheless, older people come out with lower ratings, and that sadly is especially true for women. The drop-off among women is much faster in looks ratings with age than it is among men.
So and I want to make sure our listeners and that I understand that, so that over time, women are rated as less attractive as they age.
That's true for both women and men, but the decline with age is much more rapid for women than for men.
What's been the response to your book, Beauty Pays?
Oh, in terms of the discussion of possible legal protection for bad-looking people, I was put on all kinds of, let's say, right-wing talk shows and was frequently lambasted by the hosts. Okay, they don't like this at all, since they don't want any kind of protection, any extension of protection to ugly. Otherwise, it's generated a lot of interest, some approving, occasional hate mail. What do you expect?
Especially in today's world. But are you arguing for some kind of legal protection, or are you just saying, you know, let's take a look at how we perceive other people?
Well, thank you very much. I'm not arguing for it per se. I think in terms of its immutability, it's very little different from some of the things we now protect. My concern is that we devote resources to protecting groups legally, and regrettably these days, our resources for that purpose are limited. I think logically I'd be happy to extend protection to very bad-looking people, but not if it took away from the protections we now offer to other groups that I personally view as more deserving.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Professor Daniel Hammermesh. He's a professor of economics at the University of Texas at Austin, and he's also written a new book called Beauty Pays, Why Attractive People Are More Successful. You've had a chance to hear some of his thoughts, his ideas. What do you think? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. One question is, do the so-called less attractive deserve some kind of legal protection? 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Lancaster City Arts is proud to support WHYY. Lancaster City Arts, 125 art venues, all within one walkable community. From galleries, art studios, museums, and an art college, to music, poetry, dance, photography, professional theater, and symphony, it's an opportunity to experience something different in an art scene that's quite unexpected itself. Lancaster City Arts. The journey starts online at lancasterarts.com.
On the next Fresh Air, how one State Department employee spent time rebuilding Iraq.
We had money everywhere. It was literally in boxes that you had to step over. At one point in time, I had $100,000 in cash in a small safe in my office. I felt like a drug dealer.
Peter Van Buren's new book is We Meant Well, How I Helped Lose the Battle for the Hearts and Minds of the Iraqi People. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Support for WHYY comes from Westtown School. Since 1799, Westtown has invited students pre-K through 12th grade to pursue a global education, one that helps prepare them not only for college and career, but also for life. Parents who want challenging academics and character development for their child can learn more by attending Westtown's lower and middle school open house Monday, October 10th at 8:30 a.m. Details at westtown.edu.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Daniel Hammermesh. He says that whether you like it or not, looks help you get ahead in the world. He's found that attractive people make a lot more money than less attractive people, a finding that obviously pushes a lot of buttons. He has written about all of this in a new book called Beauty Pays, Why Attractive People Are More Successful. And we have calls coming into 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So, Professor Hammermesh, let's say someone decides to get some plastic surgery to enhance their appearance. Does that help them in a sense? Would that help them get a raise or reap some of the financial benefits?
It helps a bit, just as buying better clothing and doing your hair better. If I had any, I would do my hair better. But the real problem is it just doesn't pay dollar for dollar. You put a buck into those things, you don't even get a dollar back in terms of extra salary. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
Right.
It's just not an economic decision in a narrow sense.
But if attractiveness pays and someone takes steps to enhance their appearance, wouldn't they reap that benefit?
The problem is it's very difficult to enhance your appearance. I mean, look, if it were easy to do, we'd all be good looking and I wouldn't be talking about this on the air with you today. The fact of the matter is the few studies that have looked at this say that it just doesn't affect how others view your appearance very much. Doesn't mean it couldn't someday be possible. I imagine the movie Face Off, where you get a total reconstruction of your whole bone structure, but we're not quite there yet.
But I'm wondering, and I'm thinking of those people that might not meet the definition, such as it is, of attractiveness, but at the same time, they have style, they have personality, they have a kind of je ne sais quoi that makes them attractive. Can you factor that into our discussion?
Well, we've tried, and others have tried in their studies, trying to adjust for measures of personality independent of beauty, measures of self-confidence, height, weight. And yes, all those things matter. And that's a good thing because it means your facial looks isn't the only thing that really affects how you do. But even accounting for all those other things, pure facial beauty seems to have these fairly substantial effects.
And why do then pretty or attractive people end up with attractive mates?
They do. I mean, because we're trading our looks in the marriage market, and we all value looks. It's not perfect, though. I mean, if I'm a bad-looking guy, and on the other hand, I have other things going for me, like perhaps intelligence or ability to earn a lot of money, I might attract a good-looking wife. And obviously, for a woman, same thing.
You think you're trading in attractiveness or looks?
Yes, we're exactly trading. We're trading our looks when we're looking for a job and getting paid. We're trading our looks when we're looking for a loan. We impress the person that somehow looks are good and make us a better risk. And we do it also in the market and then for dates and spouses. All of these things, because beauty is scarce, involve an exchange of beauty for other things that we value.
In fact, you say that attractive people get better deals on loans.
Yes, for unsecured loans, a few studies have shown that, in fact, the better-looking people get easier terms, lower interest rates, etc., and despite that, they're more likely to default, which is really quite remarkable, I think.
And it would be interesting to run some experiments to talk about or to see whether if someone is having a phone conversation versus sitting in front of them in someone's office and what kind of a deal they might get.
Actually, it's a very neat study which looked at that. It did some blind stuff. And sure, the effect of beauty in such cases didn't matter so much. And people, in fact, hearing a nice voice on the phone attributed good looks to the person with a nice voice. In other words, even when we don't see the person, if we hear things about them that we think are associated with beauty, we'll assume with no other information that they're better looking.
And are looks associated with health? You referenced this earlier, in a very maybe subliminal way?
I think that's what's going on behind all this, that we think that good looks indicate good health, but these days it doesn't have anything to do with it. It did 100 or 1,000 years ago. Because if you weren't healthy, typically that would reflect itself in all kinds of physical problems. But today, in the rich society that we live in, the correlation just isn't there anymore.
And do you think in time and over evolution, we might get over this?
I think that's exactly the way to put it. But so far, we certainly have it. I like to think that in my grandchildren's lifetimes, we will have gotten over this. But so far, there's no evidence that it's either gone down or gone up in the last 50 years.
Well, let's get some callers in on the conversation. And again, our guest is Professor Daniel Hammermisch of the University of Texas at Austin, author of a new book called Beauty Pays, Why Attractive People Are More Successful. And as I said, taps into a number of important issues and pushes many buttons as well. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We're curious about what you think about our guest's ideas. Let me get Erica from, looks like Princeton, to join our conversation. And Erica, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
Our topic to be extremely interesting. I married into a family this is not my husband. My husband is actually very good looking as well, but a relative of my husband's is extremely good looking. I mean, just the consensus across the board from, you know, all the way back from my mother-in-law to, you know, present day is that he's just gorgeous, and he is. And so when I married into this family, I would spend time around this relative, and I would just be dazzled by his good looks. I mean, so dazzled that I didn't really get that his personality. In his personality, he's very sullen, very angry, very withdrawn, emotionally shut down. I mean, it took me years, like literally years, to figure this out, that he's really just not a very nice guy. And yet, because he was so good-looking, it was like years before I realized, like, wow, I really don't like being around him very much.
Well,
like,
that's
so attractive.
Well, that's fascinating, Erica. Let me see what our guest, Daniel Hammermisch, has to say. Does that surprise you, Professor?
No, in fact, it suggests that I think the behavior we do observe, if you're incredibly good-looking, you figure that you'll get ahead to some extent on that, and you might not put as much effort into improving other characteristics you have, like a personality, like getting more education, like trying to be a nice guy. I'm not saying that these things are that heavily correlated,
right,
but this does give you incentive to behave differently, to take advantage of this one thing that you have.
Erica, just have a question for you. Now that you see his personality, is he less attractive to you? Erica?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Now that this is a member of your family that you described as gorgeous, but not very nice. But now that you have acknowledged just how not nice he is he less attractive to you?
Well, much less. I mean, it's almost like I constantly look at him whenever I'm interacting with him, and I'm thinking, gosh, I mean, you really are not being responsible for who your character. It's like he hides behind his face. And I see him coasting through. He has a good job. He makes good money. He gets, he gets raises. And yet his personality is like, it's the most flat, uncharismatic personality I've ever encountered. It's truly remarkable because the contrast is so dramatic. Because to look at him, I mean, he's literally like Kim Basinger or Tom Cruise, like beautiful. And then you get to know him and you're like, wow, he's just so shallow.
No, it's so interesting, Eric. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Professor Hammermisch, what she's talking about is sort of what your book is about, which is that he's been able to do very well in the world of work.
But think how much better he would do if, in addition to being extremely good-looking, he also worked at being a better person, got more education, and so on. He'd be a superstar.
Mm. But do you think that, I mean, you don't want to generalize about anybody, including very gorgeous people, but that there is the tendency or even the risk of coasting on one's appearance?
One would coast on all kinds of things. If I'm extremely intelligent and get ahead in the lab and don't want to spend my time dealing with people, I'll coast on my intelligence and not worry too much about my appearance or my bad look or my introverted personality. So we tend to do this along every dimension in which we really stand out.
How did you get interested in pulchronomics or the economics of beauty? Go ahead.
It's a depressing story. I was doing another study 20 years ago, and I had some data in which I discovered these beauty ratings were included. And I just said, wouldn't it be fun to start looking at how these affect economic outcomes? Problem was, I saw these data, spent the next 2 days walking across my campus looking at people and giving them mental ratings, which I don't advise you doing.
Yes, you can get in trouble doing stuff like that, right?
Especially out loud, yeah.
So these are the sort of hotness ratings, which I know that happens at universities.
Well, it's actually the case. One of our studies, I think 7 years ago, got a lot of publicity, and because of that, website ratemyprofs.com,
right,
that's the name of the website, started including chili peppers if sufficient numbers of students would give a person a hotness rating. So I think my work is responsible for those silly chili peppers, of which I've gotten none, by the way.
That's heartbreaking.
No, not really. I know where I am. And, you know, as I said, if you lack something in one area, you try to make up for it in other areas. And that's the advice to everybody that I give. If you're not good looking, take advantage of those things that you do have in abundance and work off those.
Well, let's see what looks like Carrie from Wilmington has to say. And Carrie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I just wanted to say that, unfortunately, I think what he's saying is true, because I became sight impaired when I was in my early 20s.
Oh.
And I feel like I'm a much better judge of character now than I was before then. I think I was may have been distracted by outer things, but now I think I hone in on people's characters fairly well.
That's fascinating,
now.
Carrie. I mean, can you see somebody's face or you just don't?
It's blurred.
It's blurred.
I have a very blurry vision, so It's just I don't see the features of people's faces.
So that's just kind of off the table. Professor Hammermisch, I'd be curious what you say.
That's fascinating. I mean, one might wonder what would happen in a society or even an institution where people were severely sight impaired. If others came in and looked at the beauty of the people, would the beauty not matter in such an institution, or would it still come out because of its correlation with other things? I don't know. I've never seen that research done, but that'd be really neat research. Gets toward her question.
Carrie, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Robert from University City has to say. And Robert, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Just curious of two quick things. One is, I wonder how different races rate other races. You know, like, can they see beauty across races, or how they would rate them, actually? And then the second one is, who would actually put themselves in that protected class?
Exactly.
Like, I'm so bad-looking that I need this boost from, you know, from our laws.
Two good questions, Robert. Let me take the last one first, because Professor Hammermisch, we were talking about this idea of discrimination, and as Robert says, you know, who would put themselves in that protected class of the unattractive?
Well, let's think. If I could recover $230,000 because I've been discriminated against over my whole career because of my bad looks, at that price, I'm willing to say I'm ugly. I mean, that's an awful lot of money. I'm quite convinced there are plaintiff's lawyers who could easily get together classes and try to get them certified, classes of such people. So I think with the sufficient incentive that there is, I don't see that as being a problem at all.
But how would you argue that in court? And I understand that there are certain things that we agree on about what's attractive. But, you know, in a courtroom, evidence has to be really locked tight.
Well, for example, there's been a lot of concern about Abercrombie and Fitch specifically saying we're not going to put in front of the store as managers those who aren't hot. And, in fact, managers have been asked to give employees hotness ratings. That has got to be something which would, if groups like this were protected, would easily be satisfactory evidence in court. So I don't think there are enough egregious actions like that going on as that I think stand up on an evidentiary basis in court.
Robert also wanted to know about how races, one race sees another race. Have you looked at that?
That's been looked at. In fact, I did. In terms of rating of African Americans by whites, the average is the same. But again, because of the lack of familiarity, you don't distinguish as well, and there are fewer at each extreme than there would be among whites rated by whites.
What does that mean?
It means that we just can't perceive the differences in a group with which we're not familiar.
So we might look at someone and see them as attractive, where an African-American might look at another African-American and not see them as attractive?
No, if we saw them as attractive, the African-American might see them as very attractive. A white person tends to be unable to make the distinctions that a person of the same race as the African-American can do. That's less true than it used to be. We're so used these days to seeing people of different races. Indeed, one of the things I got off on very early on this, before I started the research, was at a conference where I saw this woman specializing in a particular area of economics who I thought was gorgeous. This was in Taiwan. And I remarked to a Chinese-American attendee, you know, do you think she's as good-looking as I think she is? And he looked at me like I was nuts and said, of course she is. She's magnificent. Hmm. So after a while, we're so used to these differences, we can actually make these perceptions and say what somebody of the same race would say.
You have done research or looked at research that has looked at prostitution and whether it looks matter. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, prostitution is now one of the many occupations where people have done research, myself included, not on prostitutes, though, on whether their returns to looks within a specific education, specific occupation. And perhaps not surprisingly, the returns to good looks in prostitution are quite large. I've seen studies in Mexico, Ecuador, and Bangladesh, and also the U.S. on this. In all cases, looks matter a lot.
Matter to the client, and then the prostitute actually makes more money because of their looks?
Absolutely. The clients want to pay more. The prostitute charges more if she's better looking. And that's independent of age.
Do attractive people gravitate to certain occupations?
Well, yes and no. On average, sure. You're not going to become a television host unless you're halfway decent looking. But there's so many other things that affect what we're good at and what we're interested in, beauty being only one of them, that there's a lot of variation of looks within each occupation we're talking about. Even something like professoring. There's some fairly good professors. Most of them are not that great looking. So you do find some variation here. And even within professoring, beauty pays off. The better looking ones get better evaluations from their students. And within a specialty, they get paid more also.
And do looks matter when it comes to politics?
Politics are a biggie. There have now been studies in Germany, Australia, the U.S. Yeah, they matter tremendously. But they matter especially if there's no incumbent. If you know an incumbent's there, you have sufficient information not to be swayed by the other people's looks.
And I've read that height matters when it comes to politicians, but you're saying looks matter as well, especially when it's an open race?
When it's an open race, looks matter especially. Sure, height matters also. All these things matter, but remember, looks and height are essentially independent. So these are all separate factors that may affect the outcome of the race.
We're about a minute away from our second break here, but I've read studies that, you know, good-looking kids get a lot more attention. Do you think this sort of sets the stage for a good-looking adult then?
Sure. There's a wonderful study which, in fact, was titled Ugly Ducklings Become Ugly Ducks.
Oof.
In other words, our looks are pretty much relatively the same throughout our lifetime. And, of course, a good-looking kid is treated better. We all saw that in our grade school and high school classes, and that gives them an advantage in terms of self-confidence, personality, various other things later on, sure.
Oh, and setting the stage for this $250,000 that they might be earning as adults?
Well, it's separate of that. I mean, even adjusting for all the good things that being good-looking as a kid does for you as an adult, these beauty effects are independent of that. The studies that have done this measurement have held constant for all those good things.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Professor Daniel Hammermesh. He's a professor of economics at the University of Texas at Austin, also professor of labor economics at Maastricht University. He's a contributor to the Freakonomics blog at freakonomics.com, and he's got a new book. It's called Beauty Pays, Why Attractive People Are More Successful. We have just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Arden Theater Company presents the Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award-winning August Osage County, on stage September 29th through October 30th. A father disappears on a hot summer night. A pill-popping mother summons her grown daughters back home. Dinner is served, lies are told, and the battle commences. A vivid portrait of familial dysfunction brought to life by a Philadelphia cast. For tickets, 215-922-1122 or augustinphilly.com.
For his memoir, Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Philip Schultz spent a year writing about how his mind works. Diagnosed with dyslexia at the age of 58, he set out to describe a lifelong struggle for control over his thoughts and actions. On the next Voices in the Family with Dan Gottlieb, Schultz shares his story as we explore the larger topic of learning disabilities with psychologist Richard Selznick, author of The Shutdown Learner, today at noon here on WHYY-FM.
The University of Pennsylvania's Fells Institute of Government supports WHYY. The Fells Institute offers a Master of Public Administration degree designed for working professionals in the government and nonprofit fields. Weeknight and Saturday classes help provide flexibility. Learn more about the Master of Public Administration degree and Fells at an open house on Wednesday, October 5th at 5:30 p.m. Details online at fels.upenn.edu.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Again, talking with Daniel Hammermesh. He's an authority on something called pulchronomics, or the economics of beauty. He explores the way that appearance impacts things like employment and advancement, opportunity and wages. And this is what he writes about in his new book called Beauty Pays, Why Attractive People Are More Successful. Let me get, looks like Steve from Elkins Park to join our conversation. And Steve, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Hello, Professor. I believe that this topic is going to be one of the leading forces in the upcoming presidential election, that it may take a man taller than Obama, or definitely with a more or equally attractive first lady. And that the days of having a first lady in the likes of Barbara Bush are long since gone. And I'm listening.
Well, Stephen, let me ask you a question. Is there someone you have in mind?
I've totally 100% ruled out, for instance, the possibility of Chris Christie. No obese politician can possibly win against an attractive couple like the Obamas.
Well, let me see what our guest, Professor Hammermesh, says. Professor, what do you think?
Sorry for laughing, given that our governor, whom I call Governor Goodhair, is one of the candidates.
And that would be Rick Perry,
yes. The evidence does say that these things matter a lot less when there's an incumbent running. In other words, we're familiar very much so with one of the candidates. So while looks may very well matter in terms of whom the Republicans put up, I think they won't matter very much in the general election. It's also the case that these things matter much less the more important the election is. If you know more about the candidates, as we certainly do about presidential candidates, looks just aren't going to matter very, very much.
Steve, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And he talked about first ladies, and this maybe gets us into the weeds of beauty and politics. But do first ladies' looks matter, do you think, Professor Hammermesh?
I've never seen anything on this. I suppose they may marginally, tangentially, but I can't imagine it matters very much.
We are talking on the radio, and everyone knows that that phrase about having a face for radio. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't want to comment about parties who I'm talking with.
Yeah,
I just
exactly.
don't know. But I'm quite sure that, look, it's like professoring. People are not going to go into it if they're gorgeous and have nothing else going for them. But even within radio, I'd be happy to bet that the better-looking radio hosts do better than other ones.
How much are you willing to bet?
I'll bet you a nickel, as I just did on the weather here with a colleague. But I've never seen any studies on that. Certainly there are occupations where you think beauty won't matter as much, like mm-hmm. professoring, like crime, like NFL quarterbacks. Yet in all of those areas, we've shown that beauty does have some effect on how well people do.
Well, let me stop you there. You're saying an NFL quarterback that looks matter?
Yeah, even there, which is shocking. But you can give reasons why this might be the case. I mean, better-looking quarterback, people standing around him in the huddle will pay more attention to him, just as students pay more attention to better-looking professors. So in a sense, that makes the better-looking quarterback more productive than the ugly one.
And the better-looking criminal is a better criminal?
For certain crimes, that's certainly the case. Indeed, there's only one occupation where I've seen better-looking people actually do worse, and that's armed robbers. Oh. It pays to be an ugly armed robber.
Oh, my goodness. Now, okay, you're the expert here. Why? What's the explanation for that?
Well, the story, let's say you're walking down the street and some armed robber comes up to you.
Yeah.
I mean, armed robbers don't want to shoot you. They'd rather brandish a gun and hope to get you to give this money or whatever it is to them. You see an ugly armed robber as compared to a good-looking one, you're going to take him much more seriously and fork over what he wants. Good-looking one, you're going to laugh at and probably he'll have to shoot you or threaten you more. So I think it makes sense, but it's a neat finding done by some researchers at Georgia State and LSU.
And maybe with a really good-looking armed robber, you might remember their looks more than a more homely-looking armed robber?
Well, I think the ideal would be bad-looking but not too bad-looking. I mean, really bad-looking, disfigured, and so on, you remember. But bad-looking but somewhat nondescript, that's probably the best situation to be in, I would think. But I haven't seen any studies on that. I just don't know for sure.
Well, let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We are talking about attractiveness and success. And we have Sarah from Colorado joining us on Radio Time. Sarah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah,
Hi.
Thank you.
You're
I was wondering in your studies if you have found out that just like the caller that you had earlier saying it took her a while to figure out, you know, that her relative had no redeeming qualities other than his good looks. Does the attractiveness of the person making the judgments, does that affect their judging, you know, their, so say it's a boss. If a boss is more attractive, are they harder? Or more fair in their judgments of their subordinates, whether they're attractive also.
And Sarah, that's interesting. Hold on. Let me get Professor Hammermesh to respond. What do you think?
It's a great question. I've not seen anything on this. I don't know. I can't even begin to speculate.
And are you one of those people that hires and fires people, Sarah, or promotes them?
I used to be. Right now I'm a stay-at-home mom. But yes, I've been a manager, and I've had upwards of hundreds of people of subordinates beneath me, and I would say, you know, I would consider myself a fairly attractive person, and I think I've always been fair. You know, there's definitely been those subordinates that I've had that have been attractive, you know, but when it comes down, you know, to actually getting the work done, you know, I think I've been kind of fair across the board, whereas I have seen, you know, other managers, other bosses have definitely gotten snowed.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, by their subordinates, and I couldn't understand why, you know, they'd allow them to manipulate them.
Well, Sarah, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Professor Hammermesh, going back, though, to your studies and other people's studies that are in your book, are the more attractive people actually more productive?
That's the question which is impossible to answer. There's no question more attractive people will generate more sales for their companies. A couple of studies have now shown that. No question more attractive people are more likely to be in the top, in terms of size, Fortune 500 company, to be a CEO of the very top company rather than one further down the list. Does that mean they're more productive, or is it just a reflection of the fact that society as a whole discriminates in their favor? I would argue discrimination. You could argue productivity. It'd be very hard to distinguish.
And are more attractive people more satisfied, happier than other people?
Absolutely. In fact, even accounting for all kinds of other things that affect their happiness, and especially their income, marital status, age, etc., the better-looking people are happier, and that's especially true for women. Mm. Women apparently care more about their looks or more bothered by their bad looks than men are.
Because they get, I guess, positive feedback for their appearance and therefore feel better about themselves?
Apparently. I mean, in terms of the overall effect of beauty, it's about the same by gender, but once you take the effects of beauty and all the intermediate things like spouse quality, earnings, and so on and so forth, even self-confidence. Once you get rid of those, there's very little effect of beauty on men's happiness. Hmm. But a lot of the effect still remains for women. Walking down the street, people are smiling at you. You feel better about yourself, independent of anything else. But yeah, it matters more for women.
Is there a correlation between looks and intelligence?
Almost none. I've seen this. I've done a couple of studies in which this was a side effect, and there's almost no correlation. A few other studies have shown also no correlation. Now, certainly it's the case that if you're so good-looking you don't invest in yourself, an intelligence test might show a negative correlation. But in terms of raw intelligence, which is hard to measure, no. And there shouldn't be. These are totally different genetic characteristics. Why should they be correlated any more than beauty and musical ability or artistic ability should be correlated?
Well, this is not an advice book, per se. It's really based on research. But at the very end, you do have some advice and some suggestions for the less attractive in the world. What would that be?
The advice for the less attractive is suck it up. It's hard to change it, and you're not going to without spending huge amounts of money.
that doesn't provide a worthwhile investment. So what do? Is you take advantage of the things that you have in abundance. Your intelligence, you work off that. Musical, work off that. Aesthetic, work off that. This is only one of a large number of things that affects how well people do.
But do you also hope to call attention to perhaps some of the subliminal judgments that we have about people based on their appearance?
Absolutely. I would hope that eventually this kind of behavior, which I do view as discrimination, would disappear from our society, and we'd be looking at what people can inherently do in a whole bunch of other dimensions. But we're a very long way from that right now.
Let me get Maggie from Westchester to join our conversation. And Maggie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I grew up in a very small rural town in upstate New York, and my best friend's mother was a spectacular beauty. And when you come from a small town, it's very easy to become, you know, oh, Kim's mother, she's the pretty one. And I happen to be Maggie. Her mother was really the smart one. But what was has been interesting to me about charting the course and watching the evolution of this woman's life is how totally and 100% completely beauty determined the every single thing that happened to her in her life. And it still does, in a way. She's in her 70s now and absolutely beautiful and a totally natural beauty. I mean, she's let her hair go gray, but her facial beauty is just, you know, just pick any actress, Ally McGraw, Jane Fonda, you know, anybody who looks great at that age and who's had help. She hasn't had help. But the interesting, there are a couple of interesting things about her beauty.
You know, Maggie, yeah, just give us one, only because I'm looking at the clock.
Okay.
That's okay. Sorry.
There's so many that are interesting. Well, this isn't the one I was going to, but I will.
Okay, go ahead.
And that is that so often people whose entire lives that has been influenced and they had these wonderful benefits because of their beauty, they would be the last person on earth to even sometimes acknowledge or admit that that's the case. And that's what's kind of stunning, is that they'll and the people who are self-aware enough to even think about it will try to twist it in such a way that they think, well, you know, even if I hadn't been this good-looking, this, and this would have happened to me.
Well, let me take your point, and I appreciate the call into Radio Times. And Professor Hammermesh, I mean, it sounds like this is a gorgeous woman who hasn't spent a lot of time, you know, trading on her beauty and has just lived her life.
Yes and no, but as I listen to Maggie, though, it sounds like the woman's beauty has enhanced all kinds of aspects of her life. And she doesn't want to admit that this has been just a natural gift that's benefited her. None of us likes to. I mean, if I'm very intelligent and I've gotten ahead of my intelligence, I'm not going to say it's because it's a God-given thing. I'm going to say I worked real hard and I deserve it. We always want to tell ourselves we deserve things, not that they're gifts to us.
Let me see what Roya from Philadelphia has to say. Roya, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I would like to say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And actually, I come from a country where most people have long faces and large noses, and they think that the large nose is not good. Usually, you know, they think other people are more beautiful, you know. It's our nature. They think whatever someone else has is better than us. And then I went to Japan, and in Japan I found out that people have flat and kind of short noses, and they think that large nose is better. And they, the girls there sometimes operate and put some bump on their nose. And they have round faces, and they don't like it.
Well,
they like what they don't have, you know. So I see that the standard of beauty is very different between people, and everyone can be beautiful if they have their character is good. And people should be judged not by their face, but by their behavior. And I think that the people, I'm an architect, and I have difficulty being considered a little bit maybe attractive, but it's not my fault, you know. And
no, I hear you.
Discriminated because of that.
Sure,
you know?
No.
And I feel sometimes discriminated because people don't trust me. They think that I don't make efforts enough, and I'm making maybe I am being the strong waiver or being advantage, given an advantage because
of my
look. Well,
that's very interesting. Well, let me take your point, and this is a woman who's clearly thinks she's attractive and feels as if she gets judged on that.
Well, let's be careful. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that across most societies, we have a pretty good feeling for who within a society is good-looking. And while, of course, it's in the eye of the beholder, we tend to behold it fairly similarly. And that's even true these days across countries and across cultures. I have one picture in a lecture I give of an ad that I saw on a billboard in Hungary of three women advertising some alcohol. One's Asian, one's African, one's probably Northern European. And I present this to people, and they say, gee, they're all gorgeous. Even when they're all Westerners, they see these non-Westerners, but they say they're all gorgeous. I think we do have a pretty good agreement these days about who's good-looking and who isn't.
Well, I think we should end on that note because it's a nice positive note to end on. And thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Bye-bye. Daniel Hammermesh is the author of a book called Beauty Pays, and it's subtitled Why Attractive People Are More Successful. And he's a professor at the University of Texas at Austin. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. You can check out the archives, and you can also send us an email. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, and the show was produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscow, and thank you so much for joining us in this hour of Radio Times.